American media is a business. Business. Entertainment.
Unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. A dimension of the brand new blasphemy that is Newsreel X. The old WOG Global sitrep on the core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. You've just crossed into the Newsreel X Zone. In the first story of the macabre, we will peek into a world where even if your doctor knows what is wrong with you, there's a gag order to keep them from telling you. From theatlantic.com. For Pennsylvania's doctors, a gag order on fracking chemicals. A new provision would forbid the state's doctors from sharing information with patients exposed to toxic and proprietary fracking solutions. Under a new law, doctors in Pennsylvania can access information about chemicals used in natural gas extraction. But they won't be able to share it with their patients. A provision buried in the law passed last month is drawing scrutiny from public health and environmental community, who argue that it will gag doctors who want to raise concerns related to oil and gas extraction with the people that they treat. Pennsylvania is at the forefront of the debate over fracking, the process in which high-pressured mixtures of chemicals, sand, and water are blasted into the rock to tap into gas. People are claiming that animals are dying and people are getting sick, but we can't study it because we can't see what's in the products. There is good reason to be curious about what exactly is in those fluids. A 2010 congressional investigation revealed that Halliburton and other fracking companies had used 32 million gallons of diesel products, which include toxic chemicals such as benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylene. Yes, xylene! In the fluids they inject into the ground. Low levels of exposure for those chemicals can trigger acute effects like headaches, dizziness, and drowsiness, while higher levels of exposure can cause cancer. Pennsylvania law states that companies must disclose the identity and amount of any chemicals used in fracking to the health professional that requests the information. But the provision in the bill requires those health professionals to sign a confidentiality agreement stating they'll not disclose the information to anyone, not even their patients. At the federal level, natural gas developers have long been allowed to keep the mixture of chemicals they use in fracking a secret from the general public. protecting it as proprietary information. Yes, proprietary, my sweet. Proprietary. The industry is exempt, though, from the EPA's toxic release inventory. The latest move in Pennsylvania has raised suspicions among the industry critics once again. As Walter So, president of the Philadelphia Chapel of Physicians for Social Responsibility, put it, "What is the big secret here that they're unwilling to tell people unless they know that if people found out what was really in the chemicals, they'd be outraged. Outraged. Now I'm very thankful we don't live in a topsy-turvy evil world like that. How about you, my gentle listener? Do you feel the same relief that I do? For our second story, frightening, scary, bone-chilling world of the government telling their agents they can bend or suspend the law. Oh, my careful listener, we should feel so blessed that in the U.S. of A., something like that would never occur. This is from Wired.com. Wired.com! Throw the first switch! FBI taught agents they could bend or suspend the law. The FBI taught its agents they could sometimes bend or suspend the law in their hunt for terrorists and criminals. Other FBI instructional material discovered during a months-long review of FBI counterterrorism training warned agents against shaking hands with Asians. Well, you don't want to be shaking hands with those dirty Asians. He might get the bird flu. And said Arabs were prone to Jekyll and Hyde temper tantrums. These are just some of the disturbing results of the FBI's six-month review into how the Bureau trained its counterterrorism agents. That review is now complete and did not result in a single disciplinary action for any instructor. Nor did it mandate the retraining of any FBI intelligence agents exposed to what the Bureau concedes was inappropriate materials. Senator Richard Durbin, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee overseeing the FBI, said it's stunning that these things could be said to our members of the FBI in training. It will not make them more effective in their work and will not make America safer. FBI spokesperson Christopher Allen did not dispute the document's authenticity. On Friday, the FBI announced the results of its internal review. After 6 months of internal inquiry, it released a statement instructing that training would conform to constitutional principles and emphasize the protection of civil rights and civil liberties. Now, humble listener, as you sit in your house, in the dark looking at your radio, know that you're safe, and none of this could ever happen at home. None of this could ever be true in our great country. Now snuggle in, my faithful listener, and let's fly off to a world where there may be a bullet with your name on it. This is from the BusinessInsider.com. The Department of Homeland Security is buying 450 million new bullets. The Department of Homeland Security and its Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office is getting an indefinite delivery of an indefinite quantity of 40 caliber bullets from the defense contractor ATK. Attack. Attack. U.S. agents will receive a maximum of 450 million rounds over 5 years. The high-performance HST bullets are designed for law enforcement and said they have optimum penetration for terminal performance. This refers to the bullet's hollow point tip that passes through barriers without getting warped out of shape. We've also learned that the department has an open bid for a stockpile of rifle ammo listed on the Federal Business Opportunities Network. They're looking for up to 175 million rounds of ammo. The .223 caliber ammo that they're looking for is exactly the same round used by NATO forces. The deadline for earlier this month was extended because the right contractor had not been found. Looks like the Department of Homeland Security means business. And in this strange world, my rather handsome listener, what are all these bullets going to be used for? Do our troops on the front line of terrorism not have enough ammo to kill all those terrorists? What are they gonna do? Maybe this article from theguardian.co.uk will show why they need so many of these bullets. Throw the second switch! Taliban sympathizer arrests prompts new questions about FBI tactics. The arrest of a Pittsburgh man described as a Taliban sympathizer has sparked allegations that the FBI deployed a notorious confidential informant used in previous controversial stings on suspected Muslim radicals. Khalifa al-Akili. No, that is not a spell to bring the elder gods to the surface of the oceans. It's the young man's name. Khalifa. Khalifa. Khalifa, who's 34, was arrested in a police raid on his home on March 15th. He was later charged with illegally possessing a gun. However, at his court appearance, an FBI agent testified that Alika had made radical Islamic statements and that the police then uncovered unspecified jihadist literature in his house. But in a strange twist, Khalifa's arrest came just days after he'd sent an email to friends and local Muslim civic groups, saying that he believed he was the target of an FBI entrapment sting. In the email, which was also sent to the Guardian before Khalifa was arrested, detailed meeting two men he believed were FBI informants because of the way they talked about radical Islam and their appearance, and that they wanted him to make jihadist statements. According to his account, one of them, who called himself Saeed Torres, asked him to buy a gun. Khalifa said he refused. The other, who is called Muhammad, offered to help him to go to Pakistan for possible Islamic radical training. Khalifa again refused. In the email, Khalifa recounted that he had obtained a phone number from Muhammad, and after searching it in Google, came up as a reference of the case of the Nuremberg 4, where an FBI confidential informant helped secure the convictions of four men for attempting to blow up a Jewish target in the Bronx. Khalifa concluded his email by saying, "I would like to pursue legal action against the FBI due to their continuous harassment." The Guardian contacted Khalifa by email on March 14th by phone, and he agreed to talk more to the Guardian. But he was arrested the next day, and he had been denied bail as a potential threat to the public. Khalifa's lawyer believes the FBI must have been monitoring his emails and possibly his phone. Yet despite being painted in court as a dangerous radical Islamist, the only charges brought against him were for firing a rifle. Keep it down in there! Now why do they need all this ammunition if they're just gonna end up putting us all in jail? But don't fret, my incontinent listener, for we don't live in a world like that. We're safe here. We're all free here. We have our freedoms. Now think of a police state, my friends. Think of a police raid in this otherworldly place, so different from ours. A place where a police raid is not done by the men in blue, the men in uniforms, but no, corporations themselves. This is from KiroTV.com. Microsoft targeting botnets raids offices in two states. Out of Redmond, Washington, Microsoft is examining computer files that company employees seized in two raids last Friday. The company promises to get even more aggressive in its fight against online crime, rather than to wait for law enforcement to act. The raids, offices in Pennsylvania and Illinois, were much like police raids, except these were corporations doing the raiding. In video provided by Microsoft, men are seen armed with suitcases. Microsoft workers enter two office buildings, seizing evidence. Evidence of a major identity theft operation using Microsoft Windows software. And under whose authorization did they go in and seize all the evidence? Well, Microsoft's. the big corporations. We want to send a message that when it comes to the Windows platform, we'll take aggressive steps to protect our customers and protect our reputation. Now in a topsy-turvy world like that, my flaccid listener, who would bring you to court? If it's not the police that are taking evidence. And then the evidence isn't going into a standard evidence chain. Who's able to get their hands on that evidence? And how do we know that evidence hasn't been compromised? And does this give the ability for every corporation who doesn't like how their product is being used to knock down your door? Maybe I'd like to enjoy a stag flick or two on my good old Dell laptop. That's the sound of the usual stag flicks I listen to. Who's to tell Dell not to kick down my door and arrest me for obscenity law violation? But luckily, we don't live in a world like that. Some sort of strange, odd place where everything is backwards and nothing makes sense. Where you don't even need to violate laws to end up in a prison or dead. Where a hooded sweatshirt is enough to get you murdered. Now let me take you on another trip. Get safely under your blanket. And make sure you leave a light on so you don't get too scared. And let me take you off to a strange world where the leading judges don't even read the laws before making a ruling. Is it because they have no eyes? This strange world where judges have no eyes. This is from Politico.com. Throw the third switch!
Work the damn it.
I've always been a fan of the third switch. The third switch. The justices to lawyers, don't make us read the law. So much for read the bill. 3 days into oral arguments over President Barack Obama's healthcare law, Supreme Court justices made a plea to the lawyers. Please, please, lawyers, don't make us read the bill. Justice Antonin Scalia. Cut in when Deputy Solicitor General Edwin Keedler said the justices would need to look at the structure and the text of the 2,700-page law. You really want us to go through these 2,700 pages? And do you really expect the court to do that? Or do you expect us to give the function to our law clerks? Although read the bill was the rallying cry on the right during the congressional fight over the law, Chief Justice John Roberts seemed to acknowledge Wednesday that he hadn't done any reading himself. Justice Stephen Breyer brought sections of the law to court to use as props, but he admitted that he also hadn't read all the words, and doesn't intend to either. Now these poor justices with no eyes prove that just as blind. It wasn't that funny. Now, my humble reader, I bring us to our last grisly tale. A tale of people living in a world where everybody's a target. This is from constitutionalcampaign.org. In a small town of Bluffdale, Utah, not far from the bustling Salt Lake City, the federal government is quietly erecting what will be the crown jewel of its surveillance empire. Rising up out of the desert landscape, the Utah Data Center, a $2 billion behemoth designed to house a network of computers, satellites, and phone lines that stretch across the world, is intended to serve as the central hub of the National Security Agency's vast spying infrastructure. Once complete, the last link in the chain of an electronic concentration camp that surrounds us. At five times the size of the U.S. Capitol, the UDC will be the clearinghouse and depository for every imaginable kind of information, whether innocent or not, private or public, including communications, transactions, and the like. Anywhere and everything that you've seen or done, from the trivial to the damning, phone calls, Facebook posts, Twitter tweets, Google searches, emails, bookstores, grocery purchases, bank statements, commuter tolls, it'll all be tracked and collected, cataloged and analyzed and sniffed by the UDC supercomputers and teams of government agents. In this way, by shifting through your once private life, the government will come to its own conclusion about who you are, where you fit in, and how best to deal with you. What little we know about it comes from James Bamford, a former intelligence analyst and an expert on the highly secretive government agency. Bamford's expose in Wired, a must-read for anyone concerned about the loss of our freedoms, was printed on March 15th of 2012. As Bamford notes, the NSA has transformed itself into the largest, most covert, and potentially most intrusive intelligence agency that's ever been created. In the process, and for the first time since Watergate, the NSA has turned its surveilling apparatus on the U.S. and its citizens. The UDC supercomputers will be capable of downloading data amounting to the entire contents of the Library of Congress every 6 hours. However, the data being targeted goes far beyond the scope of terrorist threats. In fact, as Bamford points out, the NSA is interested in nothing less than the so-called invisible web, also known as the deep web or deep net, data beyond the reach of the public. This includes password-protected data, U.S. and foreign government communications, and non-commercial file sharing between peers. That the NSA, which has shown itself to care little for constitutional limits of privacy, is the driving force behind this spy center is no surprise. The agency, which is three times the size of the CIA, that's three times the size of the CIA, consumes one-third of the intelligence budget and has a global spy network that has long since been spying on American citizens, even before it had authorization to do so. What has proven to be surprising to some, but not your faithful reader, is that the Obama White House has proven to be just as bad, if not worse, than the Bush White House when it comes to invading the privacy rights of Americans. As Yale law professor Jack Balkin notes, We are witnessing the bipartisan normalization and legitimization of the national surveillance state. Clearly, in this world, the age of privacy in America is coming to a close. But we don't live in a world like that. We're all conspiracy theorists. We're all crazy to think the government is watching us. Wanting to see what we're up to, what we're talking about. What have we done? Or may do? So when you snuggle in your bed tonight, know that the stories you've heard could never happen here. They could never affect you. You're safe. On a more serious note, Newsreel X is going off the air. Episode 10 is the last episode of Newsreel X. In the beginning, I thought that Newsreel needed to be continued. But you can't go home again, and there's a time and place for everything. Sean Kennedy was needed. Sean Kennedy was the voice of what was going on at the time. But things have changed. And at this point, with Newsreel X, and especially with Rant Radio, we're preaching to the converted. We all know shit is wrong. We all know that things are fucked and our rights are being taken away. Our lives, both in the digital realm and in the real realm, are being impeded upon. And we've taken precautions. We know what we have to do. We are awake. I've enjoyed speaking to you all, and I've enjoyed the fun time that we've had together. And I know that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And continuing Newsreel X and the format was just an imitation. I'd love to do something in the future with Rant and with you guys as myself and in my own format. And that's all I have for you this week. And that's not even close to what Sean Kennedy would have said. Or maybe. He learned he had to grow and move away from the show as well. In server, in strength, end of line.